We have moved through the Division of Parks and Recreations. We have some resolutions we need to take up from yesterday. And Director Krishnan, will that be you?
It will. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. You should have a package in front of you on the table that has a resolution which would address each of the petitions that you took action on yesterday. And I will just go over each one of these very briefly and would ask that you take individual action on each resolution for each of the petitions. So the first one in front of you is resolution 23-06 that had to do with the yellow perch petition submitted by Mr. Clint Hay of Brookings. Again, our staff provided you a presentation on the population, what happens with yellow perch from past creel survey, biological information, harvest, all that information collected over the past 20, 30 years in respect to yellow perch, especially in eastern South Dakota. A couple of the main points there, as we talked about, fast-growing, short-lived, oftentimes don't exceed 5 years of age. Some of these lakes in eastern South Dakota, we do experience winter kill on a regular basis, so we're really looking at this as an opportunity for folks to harvest the fish versus losing through winter kill or other natural mortality. Looked at consistency of regulations and where we are from the standpoint of our agency in the state compared to other states. So, Madam Chair and Commission members, if this resolution fits the discussion and the points that were talked about in that particular petition, it asks that you would pass resolution 23-06.
We need a motion from the Commission. Motion by Peace.
Second.
Second by Lockin. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed? All right, it is approved.
Commissioners, the next one in your packet, resolution 23-07, again, has to do with the yellow perch petition from Mr. Nicholas Maris of Sioux Falls. Same reasons, same conversations took place in respect to the request from this petition as well, which again was asking to go from 15 to 10 in eastern South Dakota. So, again, if this resolution fits the conversation, we'd ask that you pass 23-07.
Motion. Second.
Move to approve.
Moved by Whitmire. Second by Bartlett. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 And those opposed? It is approved.
Going on to the next one in your package, 23-08, addresses a petition submitted by Mr. Daniel Fuchsa of Spearfish. This one had to do with the request of changing the deer drawing structure and essentially do away with the combined deer draw and go back to what the format was prior to 2019, which was you had the opportunity to submit first choice applications for each of the six firearm seasons that we have out there versus the ability to provide two first choice options in the combined deer draw. Talked about that, we looked at, we know that there's some things that we want to make some adjustments to simplify this. We're gonna continue to have some conversations about this particular structure and look at ideas that you as a commission may have, the department, and also people from the public as well over the next 12 to 16 months as we review the deer management plan and things associated with that. So again, if this fits the conversation, we'd ask that you adopt 23-08.
Motion and a second.
So moved.
Moved by Lockin. Second by Bartley. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And those opposed?
Aye.
It is adopted.
23-09 has to do with the petition from Mr. Bob Brandt from Rapid City on elk preference points and essentially the request to double preference points for those individuals that would reach 70 years of age at the time the elk season would begin. Again, we talked about how these are highly coveted licenses, both elk and sheep licenses. Unfortunately, in South Dakota, they're a very limited resource. Sheep even more limited than elk. But with the high desire to do these hunting opportunities, we have a high demand from our hunters as well. And our number of tags just simply doesn't meet the demand that's requested. Also, the conversation is, you know, how do you put something in place that favors one group over another group, and where do you draw the line of which group deserves some extra opportunity versus others? Again, our system is set up that the higher number of preference points you have, the better odds you have of drawing. No guarantees, obviously, and then also with the cubing, of points also give the folks at the higher level of preference points more opportunities to draw. So, again, if this meets the conversation, we'd ask that you would adopt 23-09.
Motion and a second.
Move to approve.
Moved by Whitmire, second by Deese. All those in favor say aye.
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 And those opposed? It is adopted.
23-10 has to do with the petition asking to have the elk drawing stats and results available earlier in the year. Again, this one was from Mr. Daniel Fuchs of Spearfish. We talked about number one in respect, we're wanting to talk about elk. We do rely very heavily on our harvest information, biological information, aerial surveys in the years that we do that to provide the best management approach for the number of elk that we have to fit within our management goals, but also to provide the highest level of opportunity for our hunters as well. Another key factor in this particular discussion is that when we look at all of our drawing time frames, application deadlines, when we do the drawing, none of that is put in an administrative rule. If we have an administrative rule, and if we come up with some type of issue, regardless what that may be, that would take away some of our flexibility and the opportunity to adapt to unforeseen circumstances or situations. So again, if this fits your conversation and reasons for denial, we'd ask that you adopt 23-10.
Motion moved by Commissioner Spring.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Bartling. All those in favor say aye.
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 And those opposed? It is adopted.
23-11 had to do with the request to divide Corson County into two units by Mr. Matthew Skodal of Meadow. Conversation about this is we talk about deer management, in particular ongoing conversations that we will have moving forward. We also brought forward the recommendation based on the fact that we did not do a comprehensive review of other units out there, that there certainly requires some merit to do that. And that will be part of our overall deer plan review and looking at other options to try to help some of these landowners address some local situations that they deal with high deer numbers in units where we also have individuals that would have a desire to see more deer. And so it becomes many management challenges for all of us. So again, if that fits the conversation we have, we'd ask that you would adopt 23-11.
Motion and a second.
So
moved by Bees.
Second.
Second by Whitmire. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. And those opposed? It is adopted.
And the last resolution you have, 23-12, had to do with the request to provide the opportunity of paddlefish harvest opportunities on Lewis and Clark. Again, we do have those opportunities above and below Lewis and Clark. Talked about how this particular stretch of water is also important for other parts of the Missouri River paddlefish population. And we, before opening such area, we would need to do some more biological investigation, have some more information ahead of us. Another key part of that, this is a boundary water and the necessity to collaborate with the state of Nebraska, as well as other entities such as tribal folks as well. So again, for those reasons, you had denied the petition, and if this fits, we would ask for your approval of 23-12.
Motion to approve.
So moved.
Moved by Commissioner Locken, second by Bartling. All those in favor say aye.
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 And those opposed. It is adopted. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, we are going to take a 10-minute break, and then we will wrap up this month's meeting with the Division of Wildlife informational items. And we are live again. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to wrap up this month's commission meeting. We've got some informational items ahead of us. We'll start with 24 deer population objectives. And I believe we'll have everybody joining us again virtually.
Madam Chair, so number 24 we did conclude yesterday.
Oh,
so that
yes.
Particular item would be already addressed. So we can move on to number 25, the bass and walleye regulation toolboxes.
Yes, my apologies. Okay. So we have some virtual presentations here.
All right. Good morning, Madam Chair, Commission, and Secretary Roebling. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. And let's see here. Come on. And my screen's showing?
Yes, we can see it. Yep.
Okay. All right. So this morning I'm going to talk about the Walleye Toolbox package that we put together for this coming year, 2023. And then Dave Lucchese will follow up after I'm done talking about the Black Bass Toolbox. Some of the information that I'm going to include in my presentation will be apply also to what Dave's going to be talking about. So as we all know, in South Dakota, walleye are important sport fish. We have, since probably the late 70s, early 80s, we've seen an increasing angler demand for walleyes across the state. In fact, they are the most sought after species, across South Dakota. Because of that increasing demand and popularity, we put high management priority on walleyes. And part of that is regulating angler harvest or exploitation. This has been done through bag limits, which typically are applied statewide, or daily limits, just basically the number of fish you can harvest a day, as well as we have length-based regulations, which tend to be lake-specific. In South Dakota, we use minimum length limits, as well as protected slot limits. And as their names imply, a minimum length limit allows you to harvest fish over above a certain length, say 15 inches. Anything below 15 inches, you got to release. Whereas a protected slot, say between 15 and 18 inches, everything has to be released, but you can harvest fish below and above that slot. Then there's also maximum length limits and harvestable slot limits. We don't have any of those in the state right now. But again, similar to what their names imply, a maximum you can harvest up to that point, and then you can't harvest anymore, and then the slot would be your harvest within the slot limit. So looking back at our history in South Dakota, daily limits in response to the increasing pressure, better boats, better technology, starting in the 80s, 1984, the daily limit was reduced from 8 to 6 fish. For walleyes. Then in 1990, another reduction occurred, went to 4 fish, and that's where we're at today. We are the same as Nebraska, our neighbors to the south, but we're more conservative than our other neighbors. So we're on the low end as far as number of walleye you can keep in a day. And then in 2002, we added a few lakes where we had a 2-fish daily limit, where we were seeing some high pressure, primarily in the northeast. Now this is expanded out to the, West River as well. And then we had a 1-fish lake, that was Reitz Lake. It began in 2002, where it was our trophy lake. We're allowed 1 fish be harvested per day. So if we look back at the length-based regulations, 1990 was the first walleye regulation, in the state. And I was a seasonal back in 88 and 89 in Chamberlain. I can remember Cliff Stone working on this proposal, a lot of modeling going on to get to the point where he proposed the 14-inch minimum length limit on Francis K. Sharp, as well as Oahe, and then it was put on Kamapeska up here in the northeast. Then in 1999, we added a 15-inch. The 14 became 15-inch on Francis K. and Sharp with a 1 over 18. 16-inch was added to several lakes in the northeast where we were seeing incredible growth rates on our fish, and so we could provide a bigger fish in a shorter time frame. And then some small impoundments in central part of the state, there was a 17-inch put on some walleyes and sawgeyes to try to keep the walleyes in the populations to control black bullhead populations in those small impoundments. In 2002 was when Reitz Lake, a 28-inch minimum length limits began. 2003, some waters in the southeast part of the state, we added a 24-inch minimum length limit near an urban center, Sioux Falls, trying to keep those fish in there, as well as hoping to control some bullhead populations. 2005 was when the first protected slot began, 15-18-inch protected slot in Belfouche Reservoir, West River. And then in 2006, the 1 over 20 inches became a statewide regulation. So if we look at from 1990 through 2009, you see initially from the first minimum length limits that were put on, we see a pretty good increase over time. And then the second part of this graph to look at is the diversity of regulations starting in 1999. We had, you know, several different regulations out there across the state, and basically you can see there things got really complex, and that's when we started with our first toolbox in 2009, is to try to get rid of some of this complexity. Regulation complexity can lead to angler confusion. You know, with so many lakes nearby, you don't know for sure which lake you're on as far as what the regulation may be, and it can definitely lead to some reduced angler satisfaction, as well as law enforcement concerns about accidental noncompliance. It's pretty tough to write a ticket when somebody really did not know what the regulation was on that lake they were fishing. So that's when 2009, when our walleye toolbox began. It provided a standardized set of regulations designed to achieve specific, measurable, and attainable goals. Myself and Dave Lucchese worked on that one, and it definitely helped us, reduce that complexity. It likes to address the complexity, as well as provide a criteria for proposing and evaluating regulations. We're hoping to go away from, that's my gut feeling, to have where we have, more biological data-driven regulations instead of just this is what I think should be on there. So in 2009, we reduced the number of special regulations that were being used at that point in the state from 9 to 4. The regulations included a 3 different variations of the 15-inch minimum length limit. All the 14, 16, 17s all became 15-inch minimum length limits if they were still in place. So we had a 4 fish daily, 1 over 20, for the higher use area, or harvest areas, a 2 fish daily, 1 over 20. And then with that partial year exemption that's out on Lake Sharp and Francis Case right now, July and August exemption to allow some harvest of some larger year classes during times when those fish are more vulnerable to dying from being released, as well as the 28-inch up minimum length limit and 1 fish daily. Took the 24-inch minimum length limits that were in place, and they became 28-inch minimum length limits. Didn't put the protected slot in the toolbox. It was still, we considered that experimental. We were still evaluating at that point, so that was left out, so it was not considered one of the toolbox regulations at that point. And here you can see from basically the arrow pointing down from 2009, we don't have all the colors in there, so we definitely decreased the number of regulations out there, so complexity was down. And the other thing with the criteria we had in there, we started removing regulations that weren't fulfilling the goals, the objectives of those fisheries. So we've definitely reduced the number of regulations being utilized as far as for walleyes in the state. So why the 2023 toolbox revisit? New staff. It's 2009 doesn't seem that far long ago, but we've had several changes in staff since that time, and a lot of them didn't even know this toolbox existed, or they did and they hadn't read it. So we wanted to get this back up in the forefront for anybody, any new staff that was looking, potentially do regulations. There's been a fair amount of research within South Dakota on walleye regulations since that time, as well as out of state. And then to hopefully provide a means for dealing with citizens' petitions to see how they fit into our regulations, and we can hopefully provide guidance on how to deal with those petitions that come across. This time it was a group effort. Like I said, last time Dave and myself primarily worked on it. This time we had 6 individuals working on it, so more people are involved. And what we wanted to do was continue to build on the 2009 toolbox, but with keep that complexity at a minimum, as well as build on that criteria for implementing and evaluating regulations. So in the new regulation toolbox, basically we've added the protected slot has come up into a regulation. We feel that that's been worthy. The one we currently have is a 15 to 18 inch slot, but we left the boundaries of the slot variable just so we can adjust that depending on the situation. And then we also kept the experimental part in the toolbox. So the 15-inch minimums, basically what we're doing with those is you want to protect small fish, increase the average size. Looking at the criteria, we want to have fast growth. Growth rates are probably the biggest thing that impede any minimum length limit from doing what it's supposed to do. When growth slows, we start getting fish stockpiling below the minimum length limit. They just never make it. and then eventually high mortality will take them out. So we want to definitely have fast growth, high exploitation, where we're seeing exploitation or harvest about 30% of the fish taken out a year, low probability winter kill. We're not going to protect fish, as we talked yesterday in the perch. It's tough to, you know, protect perch when there's a chance of winter kill. Lakes with a high probability of winter kill, we're not going to put a minimum length limit on. And then we just want sporadic to limited natural recruitment. Those don't want to, you know, put it on where we have a lot of small fish coming into one of these systems, because then your chances of having slow growth increase. So as far as the two fish, the only difference there in the criteria is we're going to have, you know, higher exploitation. And this, a lot of this came out of research we did up at Hazelton Lake in northeast part of the state. In about a month's time, we had almost 70% of the walleye population harvested. So we know in some lakes we can definitely have some high exploitation. And so with the two fish, we can expand that harvest out a little bit to more anglers. And then with the partial year exemption that we have on Sharp and Francis case right now, the difference there is periodic recruitment of large year classes or consistent recruitment. Contrary to what, you know, a lot of anglers may think, there are times we can have too many walleyes, and we need to harvest a few of them so the growth keeps moving. So when we have large year classes, we want to harvest some of those fish so we keep that, maintain that growth, and keep the average size structure of that population where we want it. As well as this exemption occurs during the summer months when there's potential for high mortality of any fish that would be released. The 28-inch minimum, or a lot of people call it the trophy regulation, the goal here is to provide high catch rates of large walleyes greater than 20 inches. We're probably not going to produce a lot of fish over 28 inches, but we should have, you know, high numbers of 20 to 25-inch fish in these populations. Good for using for maintaining high-quality fisheries near urban areas such as Sioux Falls. Again, no winter kill is a criteria. Difficult or expensive to maintain a walleye population, like down at the Sioux Falls area where you have probably high exploitation because of the numbers of people, so we want to maintain those fish, and we have potential for high exploitation. We've had this regulation on Reitz Lake since 2002, and we recently did a, you know, evaluation of that with all the data, and basically we found, you know, things are working well. We got a publication out of it, so we're pretty pleased with how it's working, and hopefully, you know, other lakes it continues to work as well. The protected slot limit, the goal here is to increase the average size while allowing harvest of small fish and maintain good growth. In these situations, typically we have abundance of small fish that are growing slow because of consistent recruitment. So we want to remove some of them smaller fish to allow them to increase their growth, and then we protect them within the bounds, whether it be 15 to 18 or some other bounds, so we provide high catch rates and some quality fish, and then the occasional trophy or larger fish can be harvested. So experimental, this is basically an opportunity to test any new regulations that may be coming out from research that we're doing. Anything that's not included in the toolbox, we can address with that. Any strategies, create some unique opportunities here and there, as well as any new regulation types or ideas that may be coming from outside the state that others are having success with. But overall, you know, we have the five toolbox regulations, but majority of our regulations are still going to fall under the statewide regulation. This is the four fish, one daily with no minimum length limit. We're finding out as time goes on, this is probably the best means to manage most walleye populations, just because of the issues we have with growth and slowing down of that growth under minimum length limits. Research in other states, as well as this publication we published last year, shows that being able to harvest some of those fish to keep that growth going is very beneficial. So we'll continue with most of our walleye populations under the statewide regulation. So now the process, this is where both the black bass and the walleye stuff will come into play. Ideas can be internal or, you know, commission petitions that come through the commission. We want them to be biologically and socially acceptable, and they should fit into what we have in the toolbox criteria if they're going to move through the process. Internally, we'll go through our commission rules development process, or the CRD, and petitions we're hoping The commission can consult with aquatic staff to see how they fit into the toolbox, the various toolboxes, and whether they should move forward or not. Definitely need data. Pre-data, before any regulation, is very important, as well as evaluating with post-data. Biological, we're going to do population sampling. Age estimates, where we can get growth, mortality, and recruitment, are very important to evaluating any minimum length limit. Where we look at the size, as well as size structure, abundance, and different things out there, as well as look at what the human dimensions are saying. We can get some of this information from our creel surveys, as well as some mask questionnaires to the public on some more larger, you know, more high-profile waters that we may do regulations. We get exploitation, angler use from the creel survey information. The questionnaires we get are both we can inform public of what our goals are of the fishery to get help better educate them. And then we can get a better understanding of the attitudes and desires of that public from doing some of this dimension surveys. The evaluation, we're looking at a 10-year evaluation. It takes a while for a fishery to respond to any change in regulation, so it's going to be a 10-year process. We'll be collecting data, biological data with gillnets for walleyes, electrofishing for the black bass. High-profile waters, we're going to do, will be annual surveys. Others will have minimum of 3 surveys during that 10-year program, as well as human dimension data when feasible. Some of this remote, we might not have creel surveys going on, but we're, you know, the high-profile waters, definitely we're going to include some human dimension data. And in the end, a report will be done where we'll have a recommendation to continue or remove that regulation at the end of the 10-year period. So basically in the end of the, with our toolboxes are where the goal, you know, have a simple, efficient regulation process that limits regulation complexity and provides quality fishing opportunities, which should provide happy anglers across a diversity of anglers and habitat types. And that is what I have. I guess I can answer any questions you may have, or we can wait till Dave is done. That's your call.
Any questions from commissioners now? We'll go ahead and listen to Dave. Thank you.
All right.
Dave, I don't know if you can hear us. Let us know if you are ready. Did anybody have questions for Brian while we're waiting for Dave? Yep, Commissioner Bartley.
Thank you. Brian, thank you for that report. And this may fall with Dave's report too, but if you're doing this, 10-year program, for lack of a better word, what if you perhaps start seeing that it needs to be shortened? I'm thinking because of winter kill, or some ecological issue that goes on, or nature by choice. Are you going to have that ability to, or will you do that? Bring it back to the commission, perhaps, or to the department for revisitation sooner.
Yeah, we would definitely, if the conditions aren't right, we would move to remove that regulation, no doubt about it. If things, water level, if we go into a drought, water levels start dropping off, we're not going to be regulating a population out there. So we would definitely remove it, no matter. If things are the goal of the fishery changes, we would definitely come forward, try to remove a regulation as well.
Brian, I just have a question. With the surveys that you mentioned, and maybe you already touched on this, and if you have, maybe just kind of share with us again, what areas will you be looking at to do some of these surveys in, particular bodies of water? And
it would be any water where we have a regulation. If we put a new regulation on, it will be part of that 10-year plan. Right now, we annually survey a lot of our primary waters, and then others are on various schedules. They may be every annual, or they may be every 5th year. So it just depends on the size of the water, the importance of the water, how often we survey them. But if they have a regulation, a new regulation placed on them, they'll be included in a 10-year plan to evaluate that regulation.
Thank you. Any other questions before we turn to Dave? Very good. Dave, thanks for being with us. You can start whenever you're ready.
Well, I apologize. I had everything ready to go, and I clicked on something, and then I went into panic mode, and I had things all over my three screens and could not find what I needed. And so, anyways, the things look right now.
Yep.
We can see it, yes, and no worries. We have all been there.
Okay. Well, thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioners, and Secretary Robling. I'm sorry. I'm going to give a presentation on the Black Bass Toolbox. You heard Brian give his on the Walleye Toolbox update. Sorry to Sam Skelhaus. Anytime I do a Black Bass presentation, I do have to pull out this picture. So. In this next picture here, the guy on the lower right is George Perry with the world record largemouth bass. It was 22 pounds, 4 ounces. It was caught on Lake Montgomery in Georgia on June 2nd of 1932. Ironically, that's also the day my dad was born, and I'm happy to announce that both the record and my dad are still standing. So... I did do a little bit of fact checking here, and this record was actually a number of years ago was eclipsed by an ounce. It was a guy in Japan caught a 22 pound 5 ounce bass, but since it did not beat the old record by 2 ounces, it did not qualify as a new world record. Moreover, I'd have to say that most of our bass fishing bubbas would not even count a record caught in Japan. So on to regulations. You know, regulations, bass regulations across North America have had kind of a roller coaster history over the last 100 years. Pre-1940, surprisingly, regulations were fairly restrictive, and the big focus was on protecting spawning bass, so they had that closed spring season. As we moved on, actually regulations became more liberal. In the 50s and 60s, it was believed at that point in time that bass populations were underexploited and could handle more harvest, and so they lightened up on these regulations. Then in the 1960s, with a little bit more research and probably some increase in the popularity of bass fishing and maybe some advancements in tackle, the opinion changed, and people believed that bass were vulnerable to harvest and could be over-harvested. And so... more restrictive regulations were put in place to reduce fishing mortality, and this was done to promote a more equitable distribution of harvest and to improve size structure, to bring some of these larger bass into the lakes that were being harvested. Move 40 years ahead to 2000, And over the last 20 years, regulations have now started to become less restrictive. And the biggest reason for that is the advent of widespread catch and release. You know, BASS, the Bass Angler Sportsman Society, really promoted catch and release. In some areas, it's almost a sin to keep a largemouth or a smallmouth bass. And so a lot of the bass that are caught, unlike our walleyes, are released. And so what happened with this is we saw abundance increase in lakes, and with that you get more competition, and these bass their growth started to slow down. And as Brian talked about, growth is really important with regulations. And further to the east, they saw some negative impacts on walleye, and I'm going to put in a disclaimer here. You know, this is this is Wisconsin, Minnesota, where they've seen some real jumps in their bass populations. Our largemouth bass populations in our eastern South Dakota lakes are very low density. They have no impact on our walleye populations. And, you know, our smallmouth populations, I think research has been done in this state to show that they have little, if any, impact on our walleye populations. So to narrow the focus now, let's move on to South Dakota regulations history. And in 1982, we repealed our spring fishing closure on bass, and that had been in place since 1947. About 4 years prior, we put our first length limits on bass, a 12-inch minimum length limit, and that was on five bass lakes in the Sioux Falls area. We added another bass restriction on Lake Alvin, also in the Sioux Falls area. In 1987, we implemented a 15-inch minimum length limit there. And then, as Brian showed with walleyes, you know, these length restrictions really took off. And over the next 20 plus years, we added length restrictions on black bass onto a total of 47 waters. So this is 2009. This was the time when we did our first black bass toolbox. And of course, very similar pattern to what we saw with our walleye length restrictions. You know, some evaluation was done. We tried to simplify. We tried to eliminate regulations that we felt weren't having a meaningful impact on our fisheries. And by 2023, we had length restrictions on black bass only on three waters. And one of those is Lake Mitchell, which was added last year. We passed that regulation there to protect what's left of the bass population there. So I grabbed Brian's idea with this graph. I didn't show the buildup of regulations, but this is the regulations history from 2009, the advent of that first toolbox in the present. And as you can see, there were three PSLs, or protected slot limits, and one minimum length limit. And in 2010, we eliminated those two 12-inch to 18 and 12-inch to 16-inch protected slot limits. And the reason for this was that they weren't really harvesting a lot of bass under 12 inches. We wanted to loosen up that bottom end, hopefully promote some more harvest. And we wanted to bring regulations in. We wanted to make them congruent. There was already this 14 to 18-inch in place on Lake Sharp, and so we brought these other lakes in line with those. As you can see, over the next basically 8 years, there wasn't much change in regulations. And then we had that big decrease in 2019 where we eliminated a bunch of regulations, and that's where we stand today. So a little bit about the research that may have dictated our regulation strategy. Back in 86, those five lakes that had a 12-inch minimum length limit were evaluated by an AFS in the southeast named Pete Jacobson back then. He became a pretty well-renowned biologist out of Minnesota after his time in South Dakota. And he compared lakes with that 12-inch minimum length limit to a group of lakes that did not have any minimum length limit on it. And we use electrofishing, boat electrofishing, to catch our bass. It gives us a pretty good index. And what he found was that catch of bass was fairly similar in the lakes with the regulation and without the regulation. But the percentage of bass greater than 12 inches was higher in the lakes with the regulation on. However, a little ways down the road, he felt like there wasn't a big effect. These regulations weren't having a big effect on the largemouth bass populations, at least on some of the lakes. And so that regulation was removed from two of the five lakes. Now, also about this time, a young Dave Willis came to South Dakota, and some of his early studies involved studying largemouth bass, and especially on West River ponds. And I think Brian told me he was a part of this study. He was one of the guys catching fish. But on 41-acre Myrtle Lake, 12 anglers caught about 11% of the bass in that lake. They marked them and then recaptured them over a two-day period. So they could have a significant effect. And if you go smaller yet, on Knox Pond, 4 anglers caught a third of the bass in one afternoon. So on these smaller lakes, it seemed like anglers, if they were keeping the bass, could have an impact on the bass populations. Now, also, Dr. Willis and a student named John Lindgren, he was involved in those West River studies, but they also looked at that 15-inch minimum length limit on Lake Alvin. And at first, it looked like it was working pretty well. The size of largemouth bass in Lake Alvin increased, which was the objective of that regulation. However, if we go about 9-10 years down the road, we were doing creel surveys out there, and anglers just weren't catching very many bass. They were still in low abundance. Fishing was slow. That regulation, you know, didn't seem to be working. We weren't getting increased numbers of smaller bass in addition to the larger fish. So another SDSU grad student, Bill McKibben, in the early 2000s worked on bass populations. And he basically found that eastern South Dakota largemouth bass have inconsistent recruitment, and that our populations in general, even those protected by, most of those were probably protected by a length limit, are just comprised of a few larger fish. We don't see those smaller fish we need to replace for replacement. And I think a big reason behind this is that in eastern South Dakota, unlike western South Dakota, where bass reproduction is gangbusters in those small ponds, we just don't have the clear water and all the aquatic vegetation that is needed to improve bass densities. At least in most of our lakes, we don't. We have some exceptions, and one of those exceptions is Lake Cochrane in east central South Dakota. I would also say that in southeastern South Dakota, we've got Lake Henry down by Scotland, and that's another one like Cochrane where we see good bass recruitment. But in Lake Cochrane, we had a decent bass population. However, all of the panfish, bluegills, crappies, and some yellow perch were small because they were so dense that they didn't grow very well, and so the Northeast basically implemented what's called a bluegill option. They put a 15-inch minimum length limit on those bass in 1999 to boost their density so that they could eat down basically the abundant panfish, and you would get bigger panfish. And it worked. The bass density increased. However, bass growth slowed, but we did start to see bigger panfish. I mean, there were fish showing up that people could catch and harvest. I mean, when I first looked at that lake, there wasn't a perch over 8 inches, and the bluegills, I think, maxed out at under 7 inches. And now people had panfish that they could keep. However, you know, bass growth had slowed so much that in 2005, they changed that minimum length limit to a protected slot limit, and then in 2010 they pulled the limit altogether, and surprisingly, or I guess maybe a little bit surprisingly, the densities remained high even without those restrictions, which may basically lend credence to the fact that a lot of anglers are releasing their bass. Growth did improve slightly, but still isn't fast. If we move on to smallmouth bass, you know, smallmouth were first introduced into Clear Lake in Marshall County in 1982, and I would say that a lot of folks think that this was a positive step. However, some of Hull's friends up in the Northeast there, Sisseton, still are not very happy about the introduction of smallmouth bass. They blame anything wrong with perch and walleyes on these introductions. However, over the next 10 years, we put smallmouth into a bunch of lakes across eastern South Dakota. And smallmouth, unlike our walleyes, which we have to supplement in a lot of our lakes year after year after year, once we put them in, if they had the right habitat, nice clear water, they brought off young every year. And so they were self-maintaining. They do excellent in our eastern South Dakota lakes. So our smallmouth bass research has kind of focused on those protected slot limits, which is what we use to regulate to try to produce a larger product. And what we found, John Lott looked at this on Lake Sharp, and what we found is that when we had these protected slots on, and the bottom of that slot was 12 inches, only a small fraction of the bass under 12 inches that were being caught were being harvested. So that effort to improve harvest of smaller fish by using a protected slot wasn't working. And when we relaxed this slot up to about 14 inches, the percentage of fish under 14 inches that were being kept only jumped to about 10%. Now, I went looking for images of smallmouth bass on Lake Sharp, and this one came up of Nick Harrington, but also I saw this image, and this is a younger Nick at age 13 with a limit of walleye. I gotta admit, I'm a little jealous, Nick. I wish I could have grown a beard and mustache like that when I was 13. I suppose, Nick, that's early puberty and good facial hair is going to be an advantage when you become a Sasquatch. So I guess you're just lucky.
Thanks, Dave.
So anyways, back to regulations. Mark Finsel took a look at the protected slot limit on Lake Sharp, and he did see an improvement in the size of smallmouth bass when the protective slot limit was in place. However, he also saw a similar increase in size structure on Lake Francis Case in Oahe, where there was no protective slot limit. So it was hard to attribute that change to the regulation. If we move to the northeast, we see something very similar to what we saw on the Missouri River reservoirs. Angler harvest of black bass, smallmouth, largemouth, under 12 inches was very minimal up in North Dakota, and this was work done by Brian Blackwell and team there. However, early on at least, and I would agree with this, size of smallmouth bass improved after that regulation was put in place. And I remember going up there with nephews and stuff on Pickerel Lake and being able to readily catch 16, 17-inch smallmouth bass right next to Pickerel Lake State Park, which I'm sure those fish would have been harvested had not the regulation been in place. So we just have a couple regulations with the black bass toolbox, and we've got numbers just like what Brian has, but I thought at this point in time I would just kind of cover these in general. Similar to any minimum length limit, the objective is to increase abundance and or size structure with a minimum length limit. And in the case of these bass, it's also you can also implement that panfish option where you increase the density of bass, they eat up overabundant panfish, and you get better-sized panfish. The criteria for putting these on, very similar to what Brian described, if you have moderate to low-density fish, which means that those fish will grow well, and then significant exploitation. So, in other words, the Lake Mitchell example, one, you didn't have great recruitment, and two, panfish anglers probably were harvesting a fair number of those small bass. So that's what we mean by that. The other option is the protected slot limit. And the objective, once again, here is to increase size structure, but in this case, you're trying to allow harvest of smaller bass to avoid that slowing of growth. And a little bit different population attributes. You apply this on populations which typically have consistent recruitment. That's why it's been used commonly with our smallmouth bass in this state. Moderate growth, however, small bass might grow slowly. You've got high take or exploitation of larger bass, and you need anglers that are willing to harvest small bass. And finally, we've got our experimental regulations. And once again, similar to what's in the walleye toolbox, the objective here is it's a tool to evaluate new regulations. And these regulations might provide a unique management or biological situation or create a unique fishing opportunity. So with that, I will take any questions.
Very good. Questions or comments from any of the commissioners?
I guess I just got one. Commissioner Beast here. I always get asked about why don't we put size limits so these fish can grow larger, but it sounds like if we ain't harvesting plenty of the smaller fish, we don't get growth size. Is that what I'm getting out of your presentation there? Or
I was trying to, Commissioner, could you repeat that question again?
I get asked quite a bit, why don't we put more size regulations on so we have bigger fish, but it sounds like from your presentation that we do need to harvest smaller, younger fish to get the growth we want for the larger fish.
Yeah, I would say that is correct. And I think with bass, you're going to get those fish often anyways, because anglers are so tuned in to releasing largemouth bass. However, there are areas of the state, I would say, and there are situations where bass do get harvested. And there was a study in Minnesota which showed some fairly significant harvest of largemouth bass. And so in those situations, if you want to provide an opportunity to catch larger bass, I think a minimum size limit or a protected slot limit might still be applicable.
Any other questions or comments from commissioners? Secretary Rumbling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Dave, for the presentation. Curious as to how fast bass grow in South Dakota, especially in the northeastern lakes. I mean, is a 15-inch bass, how old is that typically?
Yeah, I'm gonna bring it up here. Brian Blackwell took a pretty good look at these things, and so let's see, largemouth bass, 15 inches. Average growth would be about 7 years to get to 15, and 6-7 years to get to 15 inches. Fast growth. 5 years, and slow growth, it might take them almost a decade to get there. So, and with our smallmouth bass, they seem to grow well about the same, maybe a little bit faster at a young age, but about 6 years to get to 15 inch in an average growth population. So it takes them a little longer than our walleyes to attain that same length.
Thank you, Dave. That's very interesting information. I mean, makes a lot of sense then why the catch and release is so, I guess, encouraged across the country in regards to the bass population. So, thank you.
Very interesting. Very good. Anything else from commissioners? Thanks, Dave, to both you and Brian. That was a very well put together presentation. Thank you.
Thanks.